ahead.
Ready to start? We will call to order the Board of Supervisors meeting at 8:53 on the clock for November 23rd, 2016. We will start by reciting the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The Open Meetings Act is posted on the east wall. Attendance by observation: Jurgens, Hill, Bauman, Dorn, Lytle, Byers, and Tiemann. Consent agenda. One is the general agenda. Two, approve the minutes of the meeting held November 9th, 2016. Approve all claims through November 23rd, 2016 in the amount of $486,193.23. Except for claim number 16110133 to Beatrice Lawn Care, Inc. in the amount of $1,326.25. And claim number 16110235 to R.L. Tiemann Construction in the amount of $16,461.02 to be voted on separately below. Approve and place on file correspondence received. Approve appointing Rodney Antz as member of the Planning and Zoning Commission. His term is to begin January 1, 2017. Approve canceling check number 16100022 to D&D Communications in the amount of $516.04 due to overpayment. And check number 16110020 to First Wireless in the amount of $240.79.
I make a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented. Okay.
Motion by Tiemann, motion by Bauman, seconded by Tiemann or Lytle. Lytle. Sorry. Questions or comments? Vote 7-0 in favor. Regular agenda. Approve or disapprove claim number 16-10133 to Beatrice Lawn Care in the amount of $1,326.25 and claim number 16110235 to R.L. Tiemann in the amount of $16,461.02. Total claims then approved through November 23rd, 2016 in the amount of $503,980.50. Entertain a motion to approve or disapprove.
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion by Bauman, seconded by Hill. The first one's for the lawn care and the second one is for county gravel or hauling, right?
Right.
Other comments? Vote. 6 in favor with Tiemann abstaining. Comments from the public and requests for future agenda items. Seeing none, we'll move on. Committee reports. We have at 9 o'clock. We have a few minutes yet. We have a Veterans Honor at 9 o'clock. Buildings and ground, winter lights.
Dave? I would call on my boss, Mr. Jones. He tells me what to do all the time.
Good morning. I have new news today, but the winter lights went over very well. We had a nice night for that. There's a large crowd, and everybody, I got a lot of good response, a lot of comments on it. Everything went good. The only thing I would like to report about is the restroom remodel. We have had a back order on the heat pump unit, and then the bidders that do want to bid on the tile had asked if I could wait a little longer, that their schedule was full yet this fall, so they asked for a little more time. So it looks like it would be probably sometime after Christmas. They asked if it could be a winter project, and I said that would be fine. Every time somebody looks at something, they bring up a concern or a question that we kind of hash over some more. Since this is an old building, we've talked about whether to rip up the tile on the floor or actually just go over the top of it. It's a good sound floor, and I do know what's underneath of that floor. It's kind of actually a plaster and lath type construction where they just poured a thick layer of a lightweight compound of some sort, so that's what it's sitting on. And so we're still looking into that. So that's the reason for the delays on that. So. But otherwise, no other issues. I just kind of want to hang around and see when you talk about the sheriff's office.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good.
Thank you, Dave.
Equalization, I think we've talked there for a while. Finance, insurance. Nothing.
Yeah.
I'll do like I always do and list the big ones.
And most of those come from Road and Bridge?
No. All of them. Not this time. Village of Claytonia and Claytonia Rescue, $13,500. A Sand and Gravel, $41,388.
Good bridge.
Cather and Sons Asphalt, $10,935. RL Team and Gravel, $16,461. Sap Brothers Fuel, $15,319.
Shouldn't this be part of the road and bridge update?
Cypress Benefit Administrators, $25,138 health insurance premium.
Good bridge. Shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, you're going
to walk in. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Yeah.
You can be thankful for that, too.
Anything else? Finance. Human Resource Employee Relations.
No.
Oh, no, I will bring it up. Because we talked a little bit about committee meeting. We have the Blue River, whatever, we have a board member that we need to appoint by January 1st.
Then that we do, yes.
Yes. And that, we have had one individual turn in a sheet that he would like to be on there, but next committee meeting, we need to be visiting more about that and deciding so that it's Blue River,
Blue River Area Agency.
We have one of the terms of the county, four people, is expiring here January 1st, and they're not going to be running again, so we will need to be appointing somebody for that.
And what meeting are we going to appoint that person? The 7th or the 21st?
I don't know. That's why we're
But anybody that's
it.
Interested should let us know if there's anybody else
Yeah, if there's anybody else interested or otherwise, yeah, we need to decide if we want to go ahead and appoint them or whatever. Well, at committee meetings next time, we'll have that discussion and
All right.
See if how we want to proceed with that, but just so everybody's aware of that. So.
I would think then you would want to have the appointment on the last meeting in December, because if you're going to bring it up at the committee meetings, if we don't have enough time for people to submit it, you can talk about it again at the meeting and publicly request.
Okay.
Yes. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. Otherwise, you're not going
to. One of the next two meetings we will and stuff. So, right. Yeah.
Can we back up to equalization again? I see Patty has brought in her.
I was just going to leave it with you guys.
Okay, all right.
Don't let Terry take it.
I don't want to see that.
Terry might edit it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, but Phil, are they here?
Yeah.
They are.
Herman
and they're here? Okay. Whatever. Just a minute, and we'll be ready to start here.
All right.
Okay.
This is
Can I take it home with me?
No.
Whoa.
This is precious stuff, so you can't.
The red flags, though.
Yep. It was right here where the...
So, yeah, if they want to come in... We'll go ahead and.
They sold the board. Right here. This is the date, October 1st, 13th, September 30th, the 16th. So this is what's still giving us a headache, because they were still high down. So just study a little bit, watch back here.
Also, we'll
study the.
And Patty does have that down at her office, so anybody.
And I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See, and this is where it's the problem. I see it.
Trust me.
We'll bring him back. Well, I don't know about that.
Last time Don gave out some sheets, it came back.
Good for you, Herman.
2 months later.
We're proud of you.
That's just part of our family. We have a lot of
school. Yes. Well, I figured you arranged everything if you're anything like my wife.
We yes. We do have a timed event, an honors, veterans honor at 9 o'clock, so it's 9:02 on the clock, so we'll call Phil to come up and introduce.
Good morning. Happy Thanksgiving. What I'd like to do at this time is honor one of our local veterans, Herman Hofling. Herman joined was inducted into the United States Army on January 15th, 1951, and he served until January 14th, 1953. Some of the things that he earned while he was in was the Good Conduct Medal, National Defense Service Medal, and the Parachute Badge. He was assigned to Company D, 188th Airborne Infantry Regiment. Herman, since he's got out of the service and was back here in Gage County, has always been an asset to the American Legion and the service organizations, providing funerals He's always been on the honor guard for the funerals ever since I've known him, and he's a true patriot, and I'd like to introduce him at this time. Herman? You always have to respect somebody that's willing to jump out of a perfectly good airplane.
Well, I don't want to be up here too long. And I myself don't feel right of getting all these honors without all those person or people that entered the service with me. And most of these are deceased, not living anymore. And so far as I know, just three of us alive now. So as long as I've been recognized, I'd like to have respect for these people too.
We thank them all, every one of them, for their service for our country. Very much, Herman.
Some of the experience I had, I did get involved in the nuclear testing in Nevada, and that was an atmosphere test. And so far here in Gage County, Richard Beck, he's not living anymore. He witnessed a ground burst where mine was an atmosphere burst, and then Gene Seidel. He was at the same place, too, later on. And that's all I want to say for myself, but I'd like to just pass these pictures around and let everybody take a look at them. And here's a clear picture.
And these are 19 Gage County boys that were inducted into the service at the same time. And like Herman said, he was one of them, and there's 18 others.
And
who's that?
That's when I look better.
Wait, Herman, here, Terry. Don't hurt yourself, Drew. Herman, we want to thank you very much. The board, this is one of the greatest honors we get to do, and is thanking our veterans here in the county for the time they put in the service and what you serve for our country. We appreciate it very much. The people of Gage County appreciate it very much, and most of them are like you. They don't really want the honor. They feel not quite right, but it's a little bit that the county can do for our veterans, and we feel so honored to be able to thank you guys.
And Herman, you don't look a bit different than you did then. Thank you for everything you've done for all of us.
So, if you have any more questions, I'll just take a seat and let somebody else take over.
Myron, I want to make a comment. When Herman was in construction, if you wanted something built and built right, you got Herman Hofflin. That I'll guarantee you. I've known him for a long time, and he was particular and precise with his work. Herman?
Yeah, thank you very much.
On behalf of Gage County, I'd like to give you these tokens of our appreciation. Thanks for your service.
Wow. It's more than I expected.
Make sure you stay long enough to get your pictures back here. Make sure you stay to get your pictures back, or somebody. Yeah, we're passing them around here and looking at them, yeah, and everything. So, but thank you, and thank you for the family for coming, too. So, very much.
You look a lot different then, didn't you?
Okay. Go back to Committee reports a little bit. Law enforcement emergency management.
All right. Well, Gus has another vehicle he doesn't want to have anymore, I guess.
We tore something up. What happened there?
Gus? Sounds like you've been summoned. Mr. Thiemann had a question for
yes.
you.
I was gone Monday. We were talking Thursday. You guys tore up a car or something again? What happened with that?
No, we didn't tear a car up. We had a problem. I brought it to committee. We were having a problem. I had put in originally for two cars. When they asked to be cut, that was one of the areas I cut. Unfortunately, we've got one, and it served us well. It's going on 10 years, and it'll be over 200,000 miles. We have continually been having problems. A mechanic told me Friday, he said, that's got to go away. It's just nickel and diming us to death. We towed it about four times. I did not know when I was talking to committee Monday, we towed it the night before as well again. So I text Gary. I just got another state bid car and ordered it. I'll cut where I can the rest of budget. We're not going to get in weapons again this year. We're going to leave our ammo budget pretty low just to get us by on qualifications, cancel one or two trainings. And I'll cut what I can in the budget, but there's only so much I can cut in it, and I still have to function. But I got to have cars for the guys respond. Last week they went, I think, an emergency call, and they just took everybody went in one car just because they didn't know what the one they had was going to. They've been having problems with it. It's the one we're talking about. So I just don't want to go through that anymore, especially with the issues we've had in the past, as you all know. So it was another, I think, 27,000 some change. And we'll just see how the budget plays out, and I'll do what I can. But I just want to put ourselves in any more issues than I want us to have. So that's what happened on the car. Yeah, we wouldn't, as I told them Monday, I'd look right in the face and tell you the taxpayer as well. It served its time. A decade is a long time to go for a patrol car, and I think we got our money's worth out of it. So that's what it is.
So, is that one of those Chargers also?
I think it's about the first one I got when I took office.
How are those V6s doing? Do those get better mileage?
Matt asked that here a while back. They're doing good. We knew it wouldn't be. The top end's okay. It's the getting going. It's a little slower. Otherwise, I've had no complaints at all on them. They've been real happy, and I wish I could buy more like that at that price, but that was a fluke. It really was. So that was a blessing for us, I guess. But, no, they're doing well on those. So, yeah. Any questions?
No.
Okay.
I'm good.
All right. Very good. Thanks.
Okay. I guess the other thing that I'd bring up that we discussed the other day is there is inspection times. There's some seized property that's going to be auctioned off. There's two inspection dates, December 3rd from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. and December 17th from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. And that is down in Blue Springs, Wymore.
Wymore at the county barn.
Yeah.
County barn.
Yeah. You got to drive through one to get to the other,
yep,
though, John.
Yeah, kind of.
If I recall correctly, it's a trailer and a smaller backhoe type piece of equipment is what's going to be auctioned. So if there's somebody interested in looking at it, them or the inspection dates, and the actual auction is December 22nd at 10 a.m. So
where is that auction at, Gary?
Down there, first floor, by DMV.
Okay, yep.
Thanks. And then emergency management, one thing I wanted to bring up again was there the CERT. Tim has been working with some guys on and ladies on getting the CERT team back to being active. And December 3rd at 6 o'clock in the EOC, there's a kickoff meeting. I know if there's somebody interested in CERT and being a CERT member or helping out the community with CERT team, give Tim Stutzman, the emergency manager, a call and see if you can get involved. That's all I have.
Thank you. Road and Bridge.
Oh, Myron.
Oh,
one other thing. Also did want to mention our monthly test on the outdoor sirens, as we do every year through the winter. Them outdoor tests don't continue through the winter. That way the sirens don't get damaged. Just want to make sure that everybody's aware of that. That way as we get into the months and people aren't hearing the sirens and they're wondering if they're broke or what, and it's just the fact that we're not testing them through the winter.
And due to weather concerns or weather issues, possible weather issues, they do that every year, and just wanted to make people aware of that. So, Road and Bridge.
Seeding on the Adams-Philly road. Culvert extensions on PWF during that inspection, and there was discovered that there are seven culverts that are substandard going through there. Matt hopefully came up with a good idea rather than tearing them out, and Gaylor's going to check on it, see if we can't use some kind of a liner or something in those culverts for replacement. I don't know how it all works, but it's something to check on because we hate to see a new road have to be
dug up.
Dug up,
yeah,
with culverts replaced in it. Sumner Street, the city has asked about a reduced speed ahead sign. The county road backs right up to the city. It goes from county speed limit of 55 to a city speed limit of 25. I have no problem with reduced speed ahead, but I feel it's wrong for us to reduce the speed on the county road for however length down the road they want to do, because there's been some issues with that that I've heard complaints about before on that. So there have been no accidents there, but we're going to study it and see what we come up with.
But we're going to do a speed yep. study, right, and stuff. So
yep.
before we make that decision.
Yeah. Yep. Gaylor and Myron attended a meeting on Highway. Well, why do I need to talk about it?
41.
What'd you do?
Yeah. Highway 41 up there. Yeah, they had an open house. House up at Adams, and they well attended. They were surprised at the amount of crowd, but they're first going to start. Hopefully, they'll let the bids out here this spring of 17, and start on the bridges. There's six bridges. They're going to replace three of them with bridges and three of them with box culverts. And then they hope to have that done, I think, by maybe 18 or something like that. And in 19, they're going to overlay it, then add 2 foot on the side of the pavement on each side, and then overlay the road. And there's some things we'll visit about at next committee meeting. Still talking with some people up there. Maybe a couple corners that there might be some safety issues on, that the way they are designed now. To Tom Goodbarn was there, visited with him, and he said one thing that really has a lot of weight is a letter like we sent the last time from a county board with everybody signing it, he said, and then CCing everybody else. He said that that gives that's a pretty good impression, he said. So we'll be visiting at committee meeting once I visit with a few more people up there, so that I told some of them I didn't want to have the county throw out this idea of how to maybe improve it, and then somebody else have a different idea.
I think, correct me if I'm mistaken here, but I think part of the issues that you brought up were the turning lanes by the Energy Adams corner, E-Energy Adams corner, and also the turning lane coming out of Adams.
By the railroad track there and stuff.
Yeah.
So those are the two corners that the proposed one there at the railroad track, but a lot of people don't like that because it's safety-wise, it'll probably put a little safer because it's going to be a straight to the corner.
Mm-hmm.
But the road getting to it, what they're going to do with our county road is, I call it basically making an S almost. I mean, you're almost going to go backwards to get over to come straight to the corner, which is the design that they could do in there. But another option is with that draw in there, if they put a couple culverts in there and make that road straight. Now, I don't know if they can do that. They tell us, no, they can't. But then the other day they were out there surveying that ditch. So I don't know. I don't know. But those are some things that if they don't correct those now, we're whatever's going to be there for years to come, which is fine too. I'm not saying that, but have our input at least, and a lot of the people up there have really been visiting with me about it too. If we all give the same input to the state, we'll probably have a little more effect than if we give three different ideas and stuff. So, but next committee meeting, and then hopefully we'll have a letter next board meeting to maybe vote on to send.
Last but not least, Gaylor has discussed about the bundling, the State Department, the new program they have. He has turned in, or have you yet, or going to? They've been turned in, bridges and box culverts for Gage County, and we'll see where that goes. Hopefully we'll get some funding on that, and it will help us out on our bridge and replacement program we've been doing.
And I'll make one more comment on Odell there, PWF. We had questions about why some of those culverts weren't we weren't aware of it before we did the road. Well, there's dirt in there and there's dirt all around there. When they found out the condition of the culverts was what they were going to extend the culvert so we could put a wider shoulder on there. And when they started digging out the dirt around those and stuff and cleaning them up enough to look at them, that's when they found out the condition of the culvert. So
several of these culverts have standing water in them just because of the way they've
The water's flowed over the years.
So it's the bottom end that's shot.
Yeah.
Basically. I mean, the rest of it, inspection, you look at and say, well, that's good culvert, but that's where we're at.
So Galen's going to be inventive and come up with Matt's idea of how to put a liner in them this year and stuff. So, yeah, right. No.
Line the ones we can.
Yeah. And that's something to definitely look at so that we don't.
Did you get a chance to check on that at all?
Yeah, I can get liners through contact up here. The supplier we do get the regular culverts through. So,
Galen and Mike. Yeah.
I haven't done any pricing on them yet, but actually, and I did talk with Mark about this, on a couple of the larger ones that we have, a 48-inch one, we can actually sleeve that with a 42-inch. I could slide a regular 42-inch inside that, a regular corrugated pipe. But the thing that I don't want to lose is the capable amount of water that can flow through that. Well, with talking to Mark, he says they do make a smooth liner, a metal liner. You can go plastic, but you put a metal liner through that, a smooth, and it'll carry the same amount of water that this ribbed 48-inch will. So that's something I will be checking with Contact up here, just a local outfit, to do. And we will do align all of them that I can. There is some that are a broken back culvert, so I won't be able to reline those because of the break in them. But every one that we can reline, I will reline. So,
what's the life cycle cost on that with a poly liner? Do we have any idea? I mean, there's just.
Well, it's, Mark said you're looking at probably, a 10-year average, you know, when you reline a culvert. Whereas your life expectancy to a new one, they say is any approximately 30 years. You know, and that just depends on the type of soil around it. You know, some of it has more acid and stuff in that eats up the bottom of culverts faster than others. And, of course, if they sit in water and stuff like that, where a lot of these over the years, the outlet of the culverts have sealed it up over the time, and that held it so they don't drain or weren't cleanly flushed. And or that backs up dirt through the culvert, so you have anywhere from 6 inches to a foot of dirt that sits in that culvert since they couldn't all flush clean over all the years that they've been in. So, and that's why when we inspected them with the dirt in some and some were actually in standing water, you couldn't actually physically see the whole bottom. And until we started digging around the outside of the culverts to put our extensions on and remove the, say, 3 or 4 feet from the outside of it, that's when you could see where the bottom was rusted out or et cetera, et cetera. So, or got in there and actually dug a trench and let all the dirt and the water go beyond our right of way. You know, that's when the water flushed out and then you could see the bottom, you know, rusted and had holes in them. So, and that's when we discovered all the.
Is it a fairly simple process to sleeve those?
Yes, you just basically you just pull a your new culvert through there, then you concrete the ends in because the new culverts would be longer than existing ones because that's what we're doing now, you know, by putting on the extra shoulder. That's why we need the extra length. So when you pull those through, you pull them through, and then, like I said, you concrete the ends on each end and backfill them, and you're done. So,
have you used any plastic?
I've never used no plastic, no.
I wonder what the lifespan on, I mean, in theory, it should last longer than metal, I would think, that new heavy stuff. But
And one thing I know Mark says that the metal versus plastic is the condition of the bottom of the culvert. He said if they're completely rusted out, you know, some places on the, there's one for the first 6 foot, when we dropped the dirt down, the whole bottom of the culvert was was gone. So in some instances, he says you got to watch what you actually use on those. So
buy us some time before we chew the road up.
Yes.
And, well, like I said, our comments at the committee meeting were that's a brand new road. We just had it overlaid, and now to if we can do something so that we don't have to basically go back in there and tear up so long of a stretch, then that's something we're looking at and stuff. So hopefully maybe something will work.
Yep.
Thank you, Galen. Anything else, Road and Bridge?
In some places, it might not be bad to tear it up. Just saying.
No, that's the good road. That's in Terry's district.
Oh, yeah.
That's John's road over there. That.
Well, Myron, don't talk.
Yeah. Okay. Next up on the agenda, we have Dave Varna with the University of Nebraska Extension. And we got together here. We've had been having a lot of discussions and stuff, and the one position out there at the Extension office. So, Dave, come on out. And Paul and Jane are both here, too. So.
Good morning, how are you?
Good morning, Dave. Good. Morning. Thank you for coming.
You are welcome. It's Varner, just for the record. Varner. So E-R instead of A at the end there.
There you go.
V-E-R? No.
V-A-R.
Okay.
N-E-R.
Varner. Okay. Thank you.
And if I reference Varner Hall at UNL today, that's no relation, okay?
No,
to be clear on that. So where do you want to start, Myron?
Let's start talking about the position out there, I guess. And we have in the past, just to bring everybody up to date a little bit, we've talked about maybe transferring that over to the university, and because we'd had some issues not getting along, some issues making that position kind of fit out here. But since then, we've had some discussions, and we find out that it's probably doable. You have to keep it on the county site. So
yeah, so we've been talking about the options. So if you look across Nebraska Extension, we probably have 55 to 60 4-H Extension assistants in our county offices statewide. And I would say of those 55, 60, about a third of those, those are all county-funded positions. About a third of those are routed through the University of Nebraska personnel system, which means it's a pay and bill process. It's the agreement that I think I shared last time I was here with the board. It's a supplement to the interlocal agreement. And what it says basically is we set the salary for that position. They are on university benefits, et cetera. They're on within our HR system, and we just bill the county back for actual salary and benefits incurred with that particular position. The advantage of that is that the University of Nebraska has an education exemption for extension assistance, and especially in light of the recent Fair Labor Standards Act, that exemption still holds true. So we did not have to deal with overtime, compensatory time, et cetera. We track all the time. The individual is supervised within the parameters of the University of Nebraska HR system. So about a third of our 4-H assistants statewide are in that situation. The other two-thirds remain county employees within the county human resource system. And that is probably where you have some challenges. Other counties have mentioned they have some challenges in that they do not have an exemption for that position. So those positions are wage and hour. They're hourly. And so I think one of the issues you're talking about is overtime, comp time. How do you handle that in a situation with a very unique, probably, position within Gage County, as it would be in most counties? You have an extension assistant who doesn't always start her day off at the office, doesn't always end the day at the office, does a lot of weekends and evenings, maybe working with a group of youth, a program all day long, so maybe doesn't take a lunch break. So you have those kind of issues that you have to deal with. And then you also have big events, whether it's festivals or the one probably on your mind mostly is county fair. It would not be unusual for an extension assistant in Nebraska Extension to put 80 hours in during a county fair. It's just that intense and that large of a youth event. And then, what's the solution then? Once you put 80 hours in a given week, what do you do? So, and counties have tried a lot of different solutions over the years. One solution is, well, just ask that individual to take the next week off, because sometimes you're trying to manage your hours within a two-week block, right, of time. Mm-hmm. So the challenge there is you'll have 4-H'ers and parents and leaders and superintendents calling that next week asking, where's Jane at? You know, where's she at? She's not there. She should be here helping us tie up the loose ends for this large event. Other counties have tried offering compensatory time and realize that whether it's overtime or compensatory time, it's time and a half, right, for those extra hours. The problem with that is you just never catch up. So you think it'll take a few weeks to catch up, a few months, and typically what happens, it goes on for months, and sometimes it runs up into the next county fair because Jane probably has a fair amount of sick leave, vacation leave build up, in addition to what the compensatory time would be as well. Some counties have chose just to pay out the overtime. So after a big event like county fair in particular, they just pay out the overtime. It's a clean slate, and then you move forward. And that way, it's probably maybe it's comparable to your road crews. I mean, you have large snow events during the winter. You probably have some overtime you incur. I'm not sure how you handle that exactly, but that might be the other county department where you have similar issues. So those are some ways that counties have dealt with this within the realm of extension in the past, and I'm sure open to having that discussion with you. The one thing I want to make clear before we go there, though, is that so if an employee is within the university HR system, obviously they follow our protocol, our timesheet, time reporting, overtime, compensatory, all those issues within our space. If the individual is a county employee, they're in your space. So then the individual and we're obligated to follow your HR policy. So I just want you to know that that's very clear, right? You're in one camp or the other. We did look at the option, and we worked with Jane and Paul regarding potentially moving Jane to the university position. You know, one of the big roadblocks or hurdles, I should say, in that option is that the university has a mandatory 2-year waiting period for an employee to start the retirement match process. And so Jane would have to wait 2 years before the university would start matching retirement. And we had talked to Jane early on about this process, and I think we wanted to make this as easy as possible and treat everyone fairly. So it seems like in the course of discussions, maybe that option is off the table. I'm not sure. But, again, I'd be open to answering questions for either option.
Well, part of going through the whole process, and it's been a process, is we've had several meetings with Jane. You've had meetings with Jane and Paul, and we've all had a lot of discussion. But we're to the point where we kind of need to make a decision on how to handle that position. And mm-hmm. part of that was the board here had questions, and that's why we invited you, and you came to answer those too. But, the one, as we looked into the university and transferring over there, the salary structure would have been somewhat real comparable except for retirement part of that. And that there we would have had to work something out how to handle. Some of the other things would have been doable. I was under the impression that originally because of the Obama thing with the certain salary, we would have had to move that over. That is not the issue. We don't have to move her over to the university to get away from the $50,000 or whatever, because it she's hourly already. So I part of that I was wrong early on. So we thought we needed to probably move that over. We found out we don't need to. Since then we've had some discussions with Paul and Jane, and John and I have been out there a couple times. How to maybe. What do we look at if we leave that position here at the county? So, but then there's been questions. I know there's some of the board members have had some questions, so that's why I brought you here today.
Perfect.
And Gary? The first thing that I'm going to say, and I think Jane does an excellent job, but I think the thing that us as a board, what we need to consider is what is going to be the best thing, whether it's the university or continuing under the county, what is the best thing for the kids at the 4-H program for us to do? Is it not, and this means you got to take Jane out of the equation and say, is this position as a university or as a county, what's better? Is, you know, so if the retirement issue is the thing and it's just because we're trying to be nice to Jane, then we need to look through and say, okay, this is the best way to do it going forward for our 4-H kids. If that means that we move to the university, then that's what we need to do. As much as I appreciate what Jane does, if that's the best thing for the kids and for the program, then that's what we need to consider doing. I just want to throw that out there before we get going.
And I would agree with Gary there. While we don't have to move it to the university side, I think we still need to leave that option on the table.
Yes.
Does the extension office or the university extension program, do they employ or pay for any employees that are supervised by non-University of Nebraska employees? It's a broad question, but this has nothing to do with Jane. This is an HR structure of an organization, mm-hmm. which is basically the mm-hmm. county that we have. With all due respect to the extension agent, it's not a county employee, supervising county employees. Mm-hmm. There's inherently a structure issue there. Mm-hmm. That's my big rub. Is that it needs to be structured differently so that we have county employees supervised by county employees.
because I'm pretty sure the University of Nebraska doesn't, and I'm shooting from the hip here, but mm-hmm. pretty sure you don't pay people that are supervised by non-university employees. I don't think organizations operate that way.
And I can't answer that question definitively because it's a large organization. So we're involved in a lot of partnerships and relationships. But you're right. It's a unique relationship, and that's why we have the interlocal agreement. This goes back 102 or 103 years to the beginning of extension and this partnership between the federal, county, and state partner. And that's kind of the origination of this arrangement many, many years ago. And this interlocal agreement that we're currently in continues that relationship. And it's like that. It's like that in every county in the state.
And even that organizational or the interlocal agreement, that's 96?
97, yeah.
97.
Right.
So it's 20 years old.
Right.
So, and let's just say we don't always do things the way everybody else does. We're unique. And so I don't know that we should continue to have a non-county employee supervising a county. I think the structure is not appropriate.
So let me ask you this, just for sake of interest. So what would that look like? Who would Jane be supervised if it was not the unit leader in the extension office?
Well, that's why I think the structure works fine there with that relationship. I think it should be a university employee.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
That's the structure that I think
is appropriate. Okay, I see where you're going with that.
That's the other thing, too, is there are two other employees out there, too, which this does. It seems extremely odd to me. I'm just listening as we've gone over this. And Gary's right. We take the people out. It doesn't matter who's in those positions. We have to look at the positions themselves. I mean, it's odd having a state supervisor watching over a county employee. Like you said, if they're a county employee, they're under county HR. If they're a university employee, they're under university HR. So according to our county policies, we would never see overtime there. Maybe a couple times, and that's it. We would take the same breaks as everyone else. We would do these things. If we're not going to follow any county HR, where do we stop then? Do we tell Don's department, work whatever hours you want? I mean, we have to look at everybody. Everyone's semi the same. And, I mean, it's not functional for that position to work an 8-to-5 the same as everyone else. So it really doesn't fit. That position doesn't fit with us, or it doesn't fit our HR policy, unless we'd have something specifically for that spot, I guess, is the way it keeps looking to me.
And my guess is that probably the lion's share of which the policy Jane works under is probably followed as far as the number of sick days, vacation days, what's accrued, that type of thing. The way she works within your payroll system, seems like the real issue probably is overtime, comp time. Are those the two primary issues that we're really concerned about?
I would say as a whole, and it's not just there. I mean, when Galen has guys that are on overtime, he gets scrutinized. I don't know how many times Galen has come up and said, well, this is why this happened, and it's on a specific, specific time-by-time issue. So it's not just out there. I mean, each time this comes up, even with other departments, I know Galen doesn't look forward to coming in and talking about that when he's had guys out for something and, you know, somebody didn't say, yeah, this is when we're going to do this, why we're going to do this.
I understand. Thank you.
It doesn't totally address what you're talking about, Matt.
Can you identify yourself, please?
But anytime.
Can you identify yourself, please? It's for the record.
My name is Paul Hay. I live at 101 Sugart Street in Beatrice, Nebraska. Thank you. Matt, it doesn't totally address the issue that you're bringing up. I understand that, but anytime there's a question about our employee, this or this is going to happen, we're going to do this, we follow the employee handbook of the county. Question if they're going to have a retirement day, or question if they're going to have what their salary is, we follow the handbook. Is there a day off for a funeral? We follow the handbook. That's always the way I've been operating. So, while I would say your point is clear, I would just say that we have all the employees that are county employees are
you know, or by the your own manual. So I just say that.
Well, and that's a fair point. And I think that feedback's appropriate. I think that the larger conversation was probably looking at over the last couple of years the liability that is inherently out there and the different things that we see. And so,
yeah, I understand it doesn't state it, but I just wanted to put that, in.
And that's how we're operating now.
Yeah, we're not a renegade outfit like these elected officials are totally renegade. No. We're not like that. We follow your handbook.
But, Paul, I guess you're saying you're going to follow the county handbook 100% out there.
Yeah, I mean, if there's any question about what we're doing, that's what we follow. What the guidelines are.
Well, that might have to be reviewed periodically, too.
Right. As a county employees, they should follow that.
But in the structure of that, outside of whoever's there,
I understand. I don't argue that. I understand it doesn't follow totally what you're saying.
Whenever there's a personnel change because of the very public liability that the county has and the very litigious society, if there's a personnel issue, where would the employee go if their direct supervisor is a non-county employee? It just gets messy.
Yeah, I'll use the word unique again because that's what it is. So the way our unit leaders are viewed in the counties is to us, I've been referring to Paul as the unit leader. Right, so he is the point person in charge of the Gage County Extension Office. I assume you probably look at Paul as a department head, or I'm not sure what terminology you use in Gage County. So Paul and all of our other unit leaders really wear two hats. And you're right. So when it comes to county policy, county issues, whether it's budget, personnel, et cetera, finance, he's working directly with you, right, because you're the county funding partner. There are certain things that you fund within the extension program here. There's some things that we fund. So, for example, Paul's a employee of University of Nebraska, as is Kayla and Nicole in the office, and so they all follow university policy. You're right. It's a unique situation, and the unit leader has two hats.
But they
can work with both sides, and we've done that very successfully.
Well, and I think as we've looked at the agreement, we figured, well, and I speak very broadly here, I think now we thought, well, now's the time, if we're looking at this agreement that's 20 years old now, do we need to restructure, and now's the time to look at maybe doing things differently.
And if I could just pick up on that, because we were going to talk about this as well, right?
We're going to talk about the
interlocal agreement.
Interlocal agreement that we have that's 20 years old.
So you're right. They were signed in 97, 98. I was actually a unit leader in Dodge County when those were all signed. And I'll tell you what. So the challenge there is that Carmen Maurer in NU Legal Counsel designed that document, is my understanding. And the challenge was to have a like agreement with all counties across the state, all 93 counties. And I remember what a challenge that was to work with 93 boards and to come to some common understanding of what that agreement should look like. Actually, I've asked our Dean Hibbert about this recently, and he's, I believe, visited with Carmen Maurer about it. There's a little reluctance to move too quickly on it because, again, it's a conversation with 92 other counties, too. If we change one, we're probably going to change all of them, just to update all of them because they are 2 decades old. So I would say that we've had inquiries just in our district, Southeast District, from about 3 or 4 counties of our 25 in the last year or two. So to me, what would be fruitful at this point is if you would take that document and mark it up and say, these are our suggestions as to how we would update it based on how we operate today. And then, of course, our legal department will do the same, excuse me, and then hopefully collectively we'll come together. Probably won't be something that will happen very, very quickly, but I would sure welcome that input from you as our county partner at this time.
Basically, the county subsidizes the extension office and the university subsidizes part of it. I still think it'd just be cleaner if we gave X number of dollars. We know what we're giving, but we give X number of dollars to the extension. You can have 20 people out there. You can have 2 people. Mm-hmm. And we're completely hands-off, and it runs as its own autonomous organization because we don't have any input. Not that we can't have any input. I mean, Paul would take it from us, but we don't give input there. That's not really our place. He's running an office out there. He doesn't need us coming out and saying, go look at this. I mean, other than what he would do for anyone. Mm-hmm. To me, that just seems a lot cleaner. As far as an interlocal agreement right now, too, I would be opposed to signing anything for very long term. We're learning about the joys of liability for different things. And, I mean, I don't think we'd want to lock into anything. I personally wouldn't want to lock into anything right now. But it just seems so much cleaner to let them work without coming to us, where we're completely removed. We provide a building. We provide X number of dollars a year. And then we're hands off instead of trying to not manage but still have management. It seems hard to semi-manage or be semi-involved.
Yeah, well, it's a very good point. And there are, I'm aware of one or two other counties in the state right now, one within our district, one outside of our district, who have raised that question as well. Is that an option, basically to contract for the entire extension operation within the county? I know that's being looked at very hard in one county, in central Nebraska right now, to see if that's a possibility or not. One of the things we're looking at is you process a fair number of claims, I'm sure, through the county system just for Gage County Extension each year. And so we're looking at what that looks like with 93 counties. Can we handle that with our business centers? And what does that look like eventually? The one thing we would not want to lose in that process, even if that did happen, and I think that's not out of the question at all. I'll be approaching the Douglas County supervisors about something like that type of arrangement in the near future, because I think it makes sense there as well. So I just would not want to lose the strong partnership with the county. So I just want you to know that regardless of what that agreement looks like, we want this kind of input. We want to know what's going on. We want to know how we're serving the needs of Gage County. So let's not look at an agreement where it's just like you pay a bill or you're paying on a contract, but we're not connected, we're not talking like we are today. Because to me, this is what's kept this partnership strong for over a century.
Well, and that's the other nice thing is we're not at a point where anyone questions the value of the extension office.
Right.
I mean, we're all on the same page with that. It's more or less details here. How do we just clean this up? Thank goodness we're not at that point, because
yes,
we all do see that value. So
yeah, it's a strong
everyone's
program
on board still.
In fact, you've got a very strong program here. I mean, you've got a great base. You have educators in multiple program areas. It's one of those counties in Southeast District where if we had another educator position, we were looking for a place to place it, you'd be in contention because of the great base you have, the great support you have from the county board. It would make sense, you know, like the Lincoln, the Omaha, the Fremonts, the Beatrices, the Hastings. Those are the kind of communities that can support the more robust programs. So together we are in a good place in that regard. Because that what I'm talking about is bringing a potential an additional faculty member to your office, which would serve a large region but would still be local. And obviously your clientele would have the best access to that individual. So,
John?
Yeah, back to the retirement question. You know, the third of the counties that, you know, is through UNL, did all of those have that two-year delay in retirement?
They all do.
How did they handle it at that time? Or
some of these were new hires.
New hires.
A lot of them were new hires, in fact.
When they chose to do it.
Yeah, and so the way that works is if you have worked at the University of Nebraska, or really I think it's any educational institution within the university, in your graduate school years to present, all that time cumulatively adds up to maybe you get 1 year credit or 8 months credit towards that 2 years. In this case, it just happens that Jane hasn't worked for the university in that capacity throughout her career, so it would be a full 2 year waiting period before she
could. But in actuality, she has. It's just the Gage County paid her salary.
Right, and she's been a Gage County employee.
Right.
Yes.
But we can't count that as.
No.
But the retirement, it would be, she's not, the any employee for university for 2 years, they can still contribute.
That's correct.
There's no matching. And then at what point, how many years before they're vested?
It's the 2 years.
So then they're 100% vested after 2 years?
Right. Yeah.
That's pretty good.
After 2 years, you can.
There's a lot of programs where it takes multiple years, your percentage-wise, become
vested. Let me verify
that.
After 2 years, we will start matching. Paul, do you happen to know after how many years we're vested in our retirement system?
Some of them do five.
Is it two or? It's not very long, so it's a pretty good.
Not very long.
System.
Well, they're not excluded from it; they're just excluded from the match.
So that's correct. So, and we have a supplemental retirement account that you can contribute to that does not have the match before the full match system kicks in. Exactly.
So, yeah, it's not that there wouldn't be any retirement. The employee could contribute. It's the match that is a 2-year waiting period. And that's the whole university system. I mean, the whole university extension system is that way.
What's the university match? And I'm curious.
It's a 2-tier system, and so this is just my recollection. So the first tier is the employee contributes 3.5%, and it's matched by 6. The second option is an employee contributes 5.5%, and it's matched by 8. And that's, you make that one-time decision, and it's in place for the extent of your career in the system.
Any more questions while Dave's here? No, thank you much for coming, because a lot of these, it's bringing out some other points that you and I haven't visited about.
Right.
I'll just say that.
And I'll make a point of clarification. So when I started an extension in 1989-ish or so, actually at that time, I could ask for an exemption to start retirement early. And I don't know when that changed for sure. But somewhere along the line, that option was no longer available, and it became hard and fast that you had to be an employee of the university system for 2 years before the match kicked in.
But they're still vested in their own money. They're just not vested in the contribution from the university. No, you said they're fully vested after that, too.
Yeah.
The county where 2 years you're fully vested? Or
5 years.
Five years. So I'm just curious. Interesting.
And I would say the other question usually comes up in this conversation is the benefit package and how do they compare. And I haven't studied yours, but if I look at other counties, we just did this in Saunders County right now, last couple months. And so we looked at Saunders County's benefit package, compared it to our middle-of-the-road benefit package, and they're almost identical. And the benefits are a little different, but the cost is essentially the same. Of course, it depends on what the employee chooses. To enroll in and such, but they're almost identical.
Gary? I really don't have a question. I guess the statement I have moving forward is that the 4-H program that we have here in Gage County, I think Jane does an excellent job. My daughter participates in the 4-H end of it, and I think it's an excellent program for the kids. I guess moving forward, I'd just like to see that we find some way to not impede in what Jane's doing and still give the kids a great program to work with, but do it in a scope that works more. I don't even know how to phrase it, but just where it flows better, it has a better business structure. That way, when Jane has questions, she doesn't have to try and get them questions answered through 7 people. And, Paul as being her boss manager or lead man or whatever you want to call him out there, it works in some aspects, but in other aspects it just doesn't, because, like I said, you got 7 people around this table that she's got to get answers to somehow. You know, and just the issue that came up recently is when we started incorporating our new time clock system, and how does this whole thing work? It's been a struggle. And where Paul doesn't punch into that time clock, he really doesn't know what's going on there.
He probably should punch into the time clock.
Is this a remote one to use this like a mobile phone to?
No, there's one in the office.
Okay.
Yeah. So then, they're trying to figure out how they operate through that, and then they're having to talk through them and then come back to us, and it's just a mess.
And as you're aware of it, it's an issue that doesn't happen once a year. It happens, and so then how do we decide that situation? And when this originally started, that was what we were working to get away from. Let's not have that situation. Let's have something that's doable, workable, and that's why. I think we will definitely continue visiting here in the next few weeks, and so we get a better understanding where the board's coming from. But I do definitely hear some that, definitely would be still interested in going across to the university system. So,
okay, just let us know.
Well, I think come back anytime. I could sit and talk to you all day.
Me too. I love this.
It's a great conversation.
So I need to add one more thing. So I will be changing positions effective January 1st.
Oh, shoot.
So I'll be moving to the associate dean position on campus. So I want you to know that the new representative, so the Southeast District as it stands today is 25 counties. So because of the scope of the district, we currently serve about 70% of the state's population in this 25-county area. So we're splitting that into 2 smaller districts. So there will be a new Southeast, which Gage County will be a part of, and then there will be a Metro District, which is Douglas, RP, Lancaster, Cass, Dodge, Washington. Right. So the new district director, associate director for this region will be what's his name? Remember? The new associate director for Southeast District. I'll send it to you. He's coming from LSU, so he's got good football roots. I won't say it's West, but I'll send it to you, okay, so you can share it with the board. He will start effective January 1st, so my commitment has been to have a long handoff of this role. So if we want to continue this conversation, I'll be here if at all possible. It's Westbrook is his name, Westbrook, I believe. And so I'll be here with him. I just as I'll work with our faculty, with the evaluation process, the promotion process, all the things that we need to do to make this right with employees and boards and everyone. So I don't want you to throw my number away. So I'll be closer. I'll be in Lincoln on campus. So let's continue this conversation.
Thank you very much.
Right, you're welcome.
We will be in touch here.
All right. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you.
Yep. And thank you for coming. Very much. Next up, approve or disapprove hiring architect for a project at the sheriff's office.
Move to approve.
Sorry. Motion by Lytle, seconded by Byers.
Discussion.
And Gus, you want to talk about it a little bit, or?
Certainly. This was a topic come up. We're about 2 weeks ago to committee on some issues I'm starting to see possibly coming up down the road for ADA at our office. And so we discussed it more from that 2 weeks ago, and that time the committee asked if we get some information maybe from some architects, what it might cost to at least look at something for us. So that's why I did. I contacted three and to go back to me, and those should be in your packet, so I get handed out Monday. It's a space planning is what they call it, I guess, is their terminology. To figure out what they can do to kind of help us over there with our issues. It's affecting, obviously, the public coming in, and we're starting to have issues now, being we're using the old sheriff's living quarters for offices as well. It's stairs up and down, and as my staff ages with me, it happens.
Is there a PT test you got to pass every year?
Yeah. And so you start to have some issues with hips and backs and knees. So it's just something that we're talking about and trying to see if we can get some idea. I know the climate's not a good time right now at all, but it's something, again, I think it's the issue going to face us, and we better address it sooner than later, I guess. So at least
even in the climate we're at, we still have day-to-day operations that we need to be fully aware of and
absolutely
and handle. I'll just say that. So, but Derek?
I guess the one comment that I'll have on this, we've discussed it a couple of different times, and I guess my discussion is that I see a need for what we need to do, and I know the dollar figure that we're looking at to probably fix that problem or that issue. My concern is that we go out and spend X amount of dollars to fix a problem, and then 2 years down the road we're doing something else. So I guess I would like to see something comprehensive where, you know, we're fixing an issue, but also helping to move along into the future with this building, because quite honestly, I think we all know this building is going to be around and going to be used for several years into the future. You know, you're probably looking at 10 to 15 years now before you're looking at getting anything new built or anything. So I think we really need to be looking at the long-term use of this building, and I just don't want to see us spending money to do one fix when we could be doing something that fixes several things. So I guess that's
and I
the
think
one
it would be good
forward.
If we made those numbers public on what we've been spending, the hundreds of thousands of dollars to make this jail accommodate what the state tells us we have to do and to take care of individuals with disabilities. I'd like to see this laid out and have the news media see exactly what we've spent since we turned down the bond issue on the jail. I'd like to see this public. We get the numbers, but I'd like to see the totals given to the public so they can see what we're spending to maintain this building.
And that's something maybe by next meeting between Don and Gus, they can come up with some of those numbers, because otherwise, right off today here, we won't be able to get those. But
right. Yeah.
Well, we also have to remember we just passed jail standards inspection. Everything is up to snuff as far as what we're required to do. We aren't lacking on anything. It's not ideal. It's not the best. It's a jail. But we do pass everything.
In the jail. This is the jail. This is the sheriff's office now we're talking about.
This is different on this. Yeah. But as far as the jail there, but I'd agree with Gary. Is that what this is geared towards, is kind of a, we're going to fix this and this is an eventual plan, or is this just fixing?
That's, I guess, what the board has to decide, what they want. I guess decide if they want to talk to architects and say this is what we're looking at for long-range plan. That's...
But I thought this was just to deal with the ADA issue coming in. This isn't a comprehensive. This is just to deal with the people coming in and out.
That's the immediate need.
That's all this is. That's all that this was at this point. It's not about getting somebody down here to come up with multiple plans of a new facility. This is just dealing with the entrance to come in because of the way that you can't get up, up and down the steps.
We're not required to do this, though. This is just a convenience.
convenience is not the right word.
Maybe
no.
I didn't even say that right. I didn't mean that disrespectfully.
No.
This is not something we have to do at all. This is just something to try to make things better.
We've had some issues over there. I don't know, I ain't going to say lawsuits are the right word, but they're, it's a matter of time maybe before we could have, those guys that just came in and sitting in the back that we don't always like to see that they like to come visit when things happen, you know. And it's not a convenience because, no, we do not have the best ADA handicap accessible entrance over there. I think everybody here understands that. Yep. What we are approving here is hiring an architect to develop some plans of maybe how we could reconfigure the entrance so that we are a lot better handicap accessible.
We want to look at what our liability could be and move forward so that we don't subject ourselves to that liability.
Would it be better to look at the bigger picture, though, like Gary said, if we're going to fix this here?
That will be all part of the discussion. All this here is approving hiring the architect to come up with. We have no idea what the cost will be over there or what a good plan will be. We've had discussions as a board, well, why don't you do this, or why don't you do this, or why don't you do this? What this is hiring an architect to come up with a plan and then show us, and we don't have to go with this plan.
We're going to get billed a hefty penny, though, by the architect to draw a picture of what he thinks will go there.
The cheapest bid was from Fackler for
I think it was $4,600, and the other one was like, what, $3,000 to $5,000?
Yeah.
Just to draw something up for the board.
Just to draw plans.
And then if... I just don't want to put something in front there, and then we say, hey, we want to peel this section of the building out, and then we destroy it to get to that section of the building would be the only thing I would worry about.
Well, they did say it's a challenge for this because they said, as you all know, it probably needs to be gone. So he said to come in and try to figure something out to get us by is going to be a challenge. There's no doubt about it, but I guess that's...
We have no idea what a cost would be over there. I mean, we could throw out numbers, and they could be anywhere from... Well, who knows what they could be, you know, and be quite honest, they may come in with a number that just might surprise us all and be a lot higher than what we're expecting, and then we may not be doing anything.
For a ramp, it's not rocket science. I mean, we can figure out a price pretty fast. But is that ramp going to be in the way? I mean, I think we all know that that piece of the building needs to, like Dave's told us, that one section of the building, the old house, probably needs to be removed out of there eventually. I mean, it's starting to deteriorate, starting to show some age.
I can tell you, Eric, when I had the gentleman down from the ADA office, he said a ramp is always an option, but in this case, he said the problem you're going to have, they're going to be because of the slope and the way of the land, it's going to go each direction so far out. He said you're going to have so much maintenance and everything on it. He didn't really recommend that. He said you're far better off. You just find something like a lift that you could take with you if down the road something's ever done. It could go with it. That was
his thought. If he wants us to put up different stop signs, maybe we could go to them and try and close a street, you know, or something, too. So we can negotiate with them. But we want to close this street if they want a new speed limit sign or something. So
I think we're over a barrel on everything at this point.
Yep, that's kind of what this is. Yep.
But that's all this is just to get someone to give us an idea of what it would look like to meet an obligation that we have for people to safely get in and out. That's all this is.
That's all this is.
It's not a renovation. It's not a. And I just want to be very clear about that. There's a need that we have to meet there.
This is in no way looking at this part of the architect hiring them, and it's in no way looking at a new jail.
No.
In no way.
Nope, not at all.
And because the bids were both under $5,000, we can and Gus went and tried to get three bids, so then we can accept those bids without putting it out for bids. Gary?
Yeah, I appreciate Matt clarifying what I was saying earlier. When I said considering a comprehensive, what I was referring to is we've discussed it. Taking the west garages and creating office space there, that's something that I think could fit into a comprehensive plan long term. So that's something I would be more supportive of than building a ramp that takes up 90% of your frontage space of the building, or something like that. Or tearing down the old part of the old house. Those are all things that to me would fit into a comprehensive plan. I could get behind doing something like that as opposed to some of the other things that we could do.
And I guess we didn't have it in the motion, but which architect are you going to hire, or I guess, or should
that's kind of
we didn't have that in the motion. Maybe we should have that in the motion or not. I don't care. That's up.
I guess the discussion Monday was just to give him permission to go forward with it. He really doesn't need our permission, but it was bringing it here, so we discuss it in public.
Danny, would he need to work with Davey as well, because it's a building and grounds issue. So
yes. Okay. And that is how we have it on here, is to approve or disapprove hiring architect for the project at Sheriff's Office.
And I think we discussed it a little bit on Monday as to what our feelings were as far as the architect. So I think Gus knows where we stand there. But it's his office, his budget.
Actually, this will come out of building and grounds.
Yeah. The architect will come out of building
that's
and grounds.
Right.
Well, it doesn't, I guess, make a difference to me. It's just whatever, when you guys prefer, if that's where we're going to go, we'll get somebody and at least see what they got come up with, I guess. But.
And like I said, the one bid was for $4,600. The other one was for $3,000 to $5,000. So the one was a local one. The other one was an out of, I think, Omaha, that area.
Well,
the other one was from. So
I'll say now that I would prefer the local that actually gave us a figure, as opposed to somebody coming from out of town that would not give us a figure. So who knows what they're actually going to charge us? So
that was their estimate, $3,000 to $5,000. So yeah.
Right.
I think Gus knows our feelings or whatever
right.
and stuff.
I'll work with Dave on it. And we'll
any more discussions? We need to vote yet. Vote 7-0 in favor. Good deal. Thank you. Anything else? Well, we do have on here approve or disapprove representation and fee agreement between Keating O'Gara, Nedved, and Peter Law Firm for the Gage County, but I think we need to go into some closed sessions a little bit for that first. Joel and Joel are both here. If you'd like to make some comments, I guess, first, or if there's anything that you want to in this here session, feel free to.
I don't see the need to unless the board has questions that they want to ask in open session.
No. Then we need to call closed session. We will, after we get done with that part, Pat's also here, we will also be updating on the Beatrice 6 in a closed session. But after we get done, we will address that part of the closed session first. After we get done with that, we will be coming on a closed session to vote on a possible agreement with them and such. So there could be a decision after that. Then after that, we will have Pat, and Pat will be here to update all of us on the Beatrice 6, and we'll have a discussion there too. So we will have a short break in there where we'll be coming out then during closed session. So otherwise, I want to take a five-minute break here, and then at 10:07 on the clock, and then we will come back and go into closed session. Joel and Joel, thank you.
Lock us in.
I can give you the calculations. No.
What did I do with
it? At 10:16 on the clock, the county board is regular agenda is back in session. Entertain a motion at 10:16 on the clock to go into closed session necessary for the protection of the public interest or for the protection of needless injury to the reputation of an individual.
So moved. Second.
Motion by Byer, second by Lytle. Vote 7-0 in favor. 10:16. Okay.
A motion by Thiemann and seconded by Byers to come out of closed session at 10:47 on the clock. Vote.
Kisses.
7-0. Okay.
Got us to sit down or stay up here.
I don't know, unless somebody asks questions. Otherwise, just stay for dinner. I entertain a motion to approve a contract for a representation and fee agreement with the Keating, O'Gara, Nevitt, and Peter Law Firm concerning an insurance dispute with EMC over the Beatrice 6 case.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Thiemann, seconded by Bauman. And this outlines their fee and their rate and pursuing further legal action. I'll just phrase it as that way, unless you want to add how more than that against EMC.
Nothing to add.
Okay. Questions? Vote. 7-0 in favor. And then I'll entertain a motion to approve a representation and fee agreement with the Keating, O'Gara, Nevitt, Peter Law Firm representing Gage County in insurance dispute with NIRMA over the Beatrice 6 case. And this also outlines fees and other plans or other things with that agreement or whatever. We are doing these two separate for one reason, and so Scott 102, Denny is on the NIRMA board. This then does not do a conflict of interest, so he can vote how he wants to on this one. So, entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Thiemann, seconded by Bauman. Vote. 6 in favor with Byers abstaining. So, thank you much. I guess you need these signed.
Don't bother with that.
You don't need that.
Minor detail.
No.
We'll give them to Don here, and they will, or you can take them over to the clerk's office so that we can
devils
get
and the details.
Copies and all of that. They can make all of that. And then we thank you guys for coming down here. I guess Don will tell you what to do here.
Yeah,
so
I can see. Do I have anybody signing?
We have to pay mileage too.
We in the agreement.
Down here. See ya.
It's in okay, the agreement. All right.
Okay, if you would take these across the hall and talk to Michelle, she'll have to put them on file first, and then we'll make copies for us and give you the originals back.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Here's your folder, and thank you guys for coming. We'll keep in touch.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
And we charge $1,000 a copy.
Which they'll turn around and bill us back for.
Oh, got it.
Happy Thanksgiving to all of you.
Happy Thanksgiving
to you guys.
Yeah, they are going across the hall. I was just making sure they were going across the hall. Doug, you got a question? That's all in that contract, and you can go ahead and get a copy of that over there and stuff. So, yeah, I don't know for sure. Roger will talk about that.
Basically, it's kind of a hybrid contingent fee agreement. Basically, there is a guaranteed, or not guaranteed, that's the wrong word, but there's an hourly rate. It's a reduced rate that they usually charge. But also it provides for a contingent recovery if they are successful in the litigation. Yeah. And again, I would note that that's somewhat less than what you would normally see in a regular contingent fee arrangement. So that's a broad brush of what it says, but that's in essence what's the agreement. And it provides for a maximum billing during the course of the contract, so that will also help out the county with its budgetary process.
He explained it better than I could, so yeah, it is right. It is somewhat of a generic, not generic, it's somewhat of a contract specifically tailored for this and the situation the county's in, I guess, so that there is more incentives if there is some positive results, but there are also minimum amounts in there that will be paid as we go forward for their services.
Sure.
That sum that up pretty good, yeah. And stuff. So they I'll just say this, they develop that knowing the situation the county's in,
knowing also that not wanting to charge us a full fee, because if there's no success, which we don't know going forward if there's going to be or not, but if there's no success, then we're not just paying the full amount for that pursuit of maybe a result from the insurance company. So, and like I said, we did each of them separate. We did both of them separate because Denny is a member of the NIRMA board, and that was so that he could vote on that separately. So, and then those are public record, right? They can get a copy of those over there and look at those.
Should be ready now.
Whenever they're done over there and stuff. So those are, that's why that is handled this way. So, and we do not at this time know if there's going to be anything. I will say this, both companies have sent letters back denying any claims or any responsibility. But from both Joel's looking at the situation and looking at everything, they developed this fee structure in the possibility of further legal actions against those insurance companies. Matt, you got anything to say, or anybody else?
And, you know, with all the news we've been giving you guys to run that, we certainly would take donations from Lee Enterprise or Flood Communication.
And they're both smiling, at least. They didn't throw anything. They didn't throw anything at you.
I waited until he was back there.
So we are going to go back into closed session here again and visit with Pat, and there won't be any decisions coming out of that after that closed session. Quick question, Doug. We don't have Meet the Mayor or anything this month. I didn't think so. I'm just making sure, though.
There would be one in December.
Yeah, but not in November here, because that would be tomorrow. Yeah. You're not working then, or?
No, surprisingly not.
Yeah.
Not yet.
And stuff. So at this time, I will entertain a motion to go back into closed session at 10:55 on the clock, necessary for the protection of the public interest or for the protection of needless injury to the reputation of an individual.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Thiemann, seconded by Hill. Vote. 7-0 in favor.
John likes to go to closed session. He always votes for it.
Okay. Move to come out of the closed session
at 12 o'clock on the clock.
Second.
Motion by Thiemann and a second by Hill to come out of closed session at 12 o'clock on the clock. Vote. 6 in favor with Bauman against. Anything else for the good of the order? Meeting adjourned, 12 o'clock.
Don't we have to vote?